Class is now in session. And the UPS Store is here to help you ace arriving on campus. Our certified packing experts can pack everything you need, from desktops to decor. Plus, when you pack and ship with us, you get our exclusive pack and ship guarantee. Your items arrive safe or your money back. Restrictions and limitations apply. To get a 20% off packing coupon and for full details, visit theupsstore.com/packing.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming my good colleague, Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, to discuss a challenge right now to understanding a monopoly. The suit before the court is Boehringer versus U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Significant is that this case bridges from the Biden administration to the Trump administration. Same challenges. It deals with something called the Medicare Price Negotiation Program, which was part of the Inflation Reduction Act and has continued. My understanding of this is that the government has such a heavy hand when it comes to drug prices, especially for the Medicare and Medicaid programs, that private industry, that is big pharma, must bend with the wind coming from Washington. However, Professor, a very good evening to you. This appears to have passed the test of court challenges, at least in terms of one panel, including Trump appointees. So that at first glance to us non-lawyers, it looks like it's solid, but you challenge directly. Good day to you.
Good day. Thank you so much for asking. It's not just this particular case. There have been a large number of cases in the lower courts, and they've all come up with the same argument. We're really putting the screws to you, because what we're announcing is if you don't yield to the price that we want for this particular program, we will cut you out of all Medicare and Medicaid programs, and you'll be left stranded. Those programs are worth billions of dollars in sales. And so if they gave a price of even zero, you'd still be better off to stay in Medicare and to let them confiscate the price of the single judge. But what happens is, on the way to this particular argument, the government comes up with the following situation. We said, we didn't tell you that you had to do this. It wasn't a direct command. We just said, if you don't do this, then what we're going to do is the following thing. And you gave voluntary consent to the whole program, and therefore you cannot challenge any of its content. And so the issue here is one of what are the uses and limitations of libertarian theory. The standard view on a libertarian is that if there is ever a case in which you consent to a particular harm, you're no longer allowed to protest it, and nobody put a gun to their head or lied to them about what the program was about. It turns out, however, that the antitrust law is not a libertarian invention. It's essentially a classical liberal invention, which says if there are certain firms that have sufficient kind of monopoly power and they raise their prices above the competitive level and other people consent to buy it, there's a social loss because the prices are too high. And that means that people who could pay something between the competitive price and the monopoly price are shut out of the market. So it's not just a simple transfer of wealth from one party to another. There's a real loss in wealth by the inability to do these transactions. So in the general antitrust law, suppose it turns out there's an industry with a cartel and everybody there raises their price from 10 to 15. And then they sell it to the customer. Well, if you start looking at the customers, those who value the good less than 15 will drop out. But there are many people who pay 15, 20, or 25, and they stay in. If the antitrust law said that you consented to the increase and therefore you cannot sue, there would be no antitrust law at all. So the rule has always been when somebody has a monopoly position and tries to raise the price, they have to give some justification as to why it is they're putting this restriction on anybody. And for the most part, when you're doing price cartels, it's very hard to find anything that looks like a justification. And so there is what we call a per se rule, which is for a group of people in an industry to raise the price above the competitive level or to lower it below the competitive level if it turns out they're biased, is a per se offense. Well, that's exactly what the government has done in this case. And so I wrote a brief with my colleague Ben Flowers. And in this particular brief, what I argued was this is a monopoly situation. Consent is not the relative test. The relative test is, can you justify this by showing inefficiency? Well, the government did give its reasons for saying why it wanted to lower the prices, in many cases to about 5% of what the market would bear. They said, if we lower the prices, we have to pay less. This is one of the most absurd justifications imaginable. Everybody always has a justification for raising prices because they want more, or lowering prices because essentially what they do is they want to pay less. So it's a useless kind of argument. And so therefore, you're not supposed to be able to accept it. Now, we're talking here about big league changes. Pricing in the pharmaceutical industry is notoriously complicated, so nobody's ever quite sure what the numbers are. And there was a fight in this particular case as to whether it was a 95% cut or an 80% cut. Doesn't matter. There's a huge cut in these particular cases. And so what they said is, look, you aren't protected on this. You're just taking our property without just compensation. And then the government comes back and they make another argument. They say, look, this was not a direct regulation. We just gave something on condition that you do something else. Now, there's another doctrine which has become ever more important in the law called the doctrine of unconstitutional condition. It's not an oxymoron, but the way in which most regulation works today is different from the way it worked many years ago. Now what the government says is, we're going to bargain with you about this stuff, so we'll start with a very low base, and then we'll take it up. So in a zoning case, for example, what they do is they zone all land in the middle of the city as agriculture, and then there's a bargain between the government on the one hand and the private landowner on another as to how he could get greater use building commercial properties or residential properties in exchange for giving the city something, larger setbacks or whatever it turns out to be, called contract zone. So whenever you have one of these cases, the question is, what kind of conditions can you impose if you're the government? And there is no reason to say that you can't impose conditions that will make things safer. And so if the government says, we will only give you an FDA license to sell stuff if you give it to the requisite level of purity, nobody's going to say expropriation, because purity, in effect, is something which is prized in drugs. And if the government imposes that condition on it, it has a perfectly powerful justification for doing so. But if it says, we're not going to give you a license, says the FDA, unless you give us one-third of the revenues, then there's no such justification. And that's what's happened here.
Professor, I want to make sure I understand this. The government is mandating, it's price controlling, by saying you must sell us this product, this pharmaceutical product, for this price or else. And if I understand the else is you get no business from us. Is that it?
Yes, and so remember, they have a monopoly over all Medicaid and Medicare accounts.
I understand, but is that something that happens in other industries? You have no...
There's never been a precedent for this one. But it's a very dangerous situation, because if you can do it in this industry, you could do it with everybody else. And we're going to talk later in the show about Trump's conditions on exports by NVIDIA and so forth. That's exactly the same kind of arrangement. We'll give you a license if you give a cut of the situation.
Isn't there a general understanding that price controls damage the economy because the price must come out somewhere else? It distorts the marketplace?
Well, that was the argument that was made, for example, in the New York Sun, and it was exactly correct. What happens if you have price controls is, it turns out if the prices are kept very low, there's a huge demand for the product, but there's nobody who's willing to supply it. Now, so you get tenfold the demand and so forth, and the under-provision means that the market tends to fail.
You get black market and hoarding is what you get.
And also the lack of production. That is, just back up a bit. One of the things that's so striking about this program is the government gets to tell you which of the one the drugs they put into this program. And they have a test which says that if you don't have a generic substitute for it, we can force you to take this. And they can pick any drug they want on a list of 10 and put it that way. So now it turns out you're in this market and you're red as the other guys in the market. Well, which of the two of you is going to be subject to the price control? And you say, go after him first, don't go after me. And there's this wasteful thing. So then they go after some guy, and they lower the price, and you never know what's going to happen. They may not be able to produce enough goods to make it go. Or if they do produce the goods, it's going to screw it up for the other fellow, was he has to charge a competitive price to cover his cost, and he's now being met by somebody who's selling, given the government constraints, at a much lower price. So you also distort the relative prices between two companies in the same sector. And the only justification they had for this was under the other parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, they were spending money like it was going out of style. And so what they did is they threw this thing in there in order to fund that. And there's another basic lesson about public finance, which is you don't steal from Peter in order to pay Paul. If you want to provide some kind of general public tax benefit, what you do is you raise the general taxes so the public knows what's going on. This is an effort to conceal what's going on. So it looks to be relatively painless when you say, oh, we're going to give you all those goodies because you're not going to have to pay the money. But it always comes back to haunt you. So it was utter irresponsibility under the Biden administration to pass it. And the Trump people came over. They could say, look, we don't like these bargains. We're going to change the pricing structure. They could have done that, but they didn't do it. Trump, if you remember, is the one who wants to post most favored nation pricing on American companies, a program so stupid it's hard to understand. And so what he wants to say generally, and this is part of the same game, you sell some of these dogs in Bulgaria and you charge them $10 per unit and you sell $10,000 worth of good. Well, in the United States, you have to give us the most favored thing. So you're selling the drug for $50 a unit here. You have to lower it by 80%. In order to keep your market.
Professor,
it's a recipe for bankruptcy.
Isn't that straight up confiscation of private property? Isn't that what...
Well, that's what I argued in the brief.
But why do you have to argue it in the brief in the 21st century? That's been true for the 20th century, the 19th century. It's confiscation.
Because this is a classic illustration. You get a novel scheme, and the judges said, look, when they're saying, why do I have to argue it? This argument, the confiscation argument, has not won yet in a single federal district or federal appellate court. So I'm sitting there tearing my hair out. I've worked in this field for 40, 50 years, and I've never seen anything like this. And then these people come along, and they say, well, if we threaten you with this, we could do it. So put it another way. When I come up to you, and I have to say, look, either you sell me this drug for $10 a unit, I'm going to beat the brains out with a club.
Isn't what Boehringer did wrong was say yes? If he said no,
if he says no, then he's going to have to basically go to court to resurrect the sales of everything else.
But it's then confiscation if he says no.
Well, it's confiscation, yes. But one of the things is the government denies that it's confiscation. Then you have to go to the court of claims. You're not going to get a preliminary injunction into this environment. And so you're now going to have to go 4 or 5 years without revenues and without government sales.
And the excuse that the Second Circuit gave is that they said yes, therefore it's none of our affair.
Yeah, and they said it was a voluntary agreement. The fact that it's a hard deal doesn't matter. And they don't understand the difference. If the price of a commodity goes up and they demand more to cover their cost, buyers may not like it and they may drop out, but that's perfectly sensible. If costs are high and your benefits are low, we don't want to make the deal. But these are a case where there's a perfectly viable market. What they're doing is screwing everything up in order to reduce the federal deficit. This is not the way in which you finance the public. And what's so tragic about it, there seems to be on these issues a bipartisan consensus between Democrats who don't know what they're talking about and Republicans who don't know what they're talking about.
Wouldn't this work the same in the military if the Pentagon went to somebody and said, you sell us this tank for this price or else we'll not do business with you? Is it the same thing?
It is the same thing. John, your astonishment is fully justified.
Well, but... you make the remark that Mr. Trump's administration is more populist than it is free market. Is that the philosophical point here? You claim to be free market, but you're in fact a price controller.
Yes, I think it is. And the rhetoric is just terrible. I mean, what Trump did, for example, with his most favored nation clause, he says this pill costs much more in Canada here than it does in Great Britain. And he puts it, well, there are lots of reasons why the prices are different, which don't relate to anything insidious. You have more expensive distribution in the United States than you have overseas. You have more extensive regulation in the United States than you have overseas. You got a government monopsony in England that's going to fight you. You don't have one in the United States. So he's just looking at the pill. He's not looking at the institutional arrangement. This is economic illiteracy.
Is this headed to the Supreme Court?
I hope so. But one of the things about the Supreme Court you have to understand is their interest today, for the most part in complicated cases like this, is an interest in the separation of powers administrative law question. They are not particularly interested in property rights issues, as we're talking about here. So there's a famous case called 74 Pinehurst, in which what happened is the city and the state of New York.
30 seconds, Professor.
A ferocious rent control system there, confiscatory, if anything ever was. And what did the Supreme Court do? It said, we're not going to touch this particular issue. And Justice Thomas suggests, well, you may be able to win on a case-by-case basis, which is, again, another form of intellectual insanity. This is a very bad place. Property rights do not have any respect, as best I can see, in any important branch of government.
Professor Richard Epstein teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, has filed an amicus brief in this matter, Boehringer versus the United States Health Department. And right now it's straight up price controls. We turn to another way the government looks to be confiscating, with the most valuable company on planet Earth, probably in the solar system right now, that's NVIDIA. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.